From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
While the spring session getting underway, it will last through May. This is the time of the year when the legislative leaders start giving some guidance on what might get focus over the next few months. We'll talk about that. We'll also hear what the governor's office is saying when it comes to holding back some additional money here in the current budget year. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week is Mike Miletich. He's the Capitol reporter for WAND-TV in Central Illinois. Mike, thanks for being with us once again here on the show.
Always happy to join you, Sean.
So, Mike, I mentioned we're getting some guidance on what could be happening in the spring session. One of those issues, apparently, is the Safety Act. It's been somewhat controversial. It was approved a few years ago. Democrats touted this change that would end cash bail, but Republicans were opposed and have since made it a key criticism of their opponents. They say too many criminals are being put back out on the street to commit more crimes. Now, Mike, Democrats, even the governor, saying that there may be some tweaks needed to this legislation. So what could we expect to hear on the agenda?
Well, Sean, I think that this is the year where Democrats are open to hearing ideas for some gentle tweaks that they've suggested for the public to bring forth ideas, whether it's people that are on the criminal justice side, law enforcement, and people on both sides of the aisle. The governor says that this law, the Pretrial Fairness Act, is working, but he knows that there are some valid concerns that people have brought forth to his office. And he wants to see if there could be anything done in a bipartisan fashion. Likely it's going to be a Democratic bill that we'll see sometime at the end of session, but he notes that there's been virtually the same percentage of people showing up for trial under the Safety Act than they did before the Safety Act. And really, the law has helped people who are violent criminals stay behind bars, and those that, you know, aren't violent are able to be let out and be home before their trial. So there have been Republican bills in the past to fully repeal the law, and those are never going to get passed with a Democratic supermajority. But this week, we did have some local Sangamon County law enforcement, as well as Republican leaders, call for some significant changes that many would sort of criticize it as more than just tweaks. But the local Republican said that every type of felony, whether it's violent or nonviolent, should be detainable. And they also say that judges should have more discretion during these pretrial hearings. Some think that judges kind of have their hands tied when they go into these hearings because of what's set in place in the Pretrial Fairness Act, but others say judges already have enough discretion. So I think we're going to see a lot of different ideas come forth for these tweaks to the Safety Act. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of back and forth between Democrats and Republicans on this. It's hard to say what will get passed, and it could be something as simple as addressing ankle monitoring and how that could be improved, or, you know, trying to have more things included in that detainment net.
You know, I will say this, when this was first introduced, and Charlie, remember, we've talked about it for many times on the show, I actually thought at the time, I thought, this doesn't sound like the best idea. But I have come around a bit more on it in thinking that, okay, well, you know, I was somebody who grew up, did not have the means. If I were arrested, especially for a crime I didn't commit even, you know, think about that. And you are innocent until proven guilty. I'm not sure we would have been able to come up with bail to get me out. And I don't know what the fairness is of that compared to somebody who has the means. Maybe somebody who's, you know, in some terrible business somewhere that is, you know, committing a lot of crime and a violent crime and somehow is able to post a bail and get out. That just doesn't seem fair to me. So I understand what they're trying to do. I think it's that is noble in that respect. But every bill, Charlie, every law, I should say, that is passed needs sometimes some review and maybe some changes. And maybe that's what's happening here.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we're likely to see come up and be approved this session is And Governor Pritzker suggested that one thing he thought maybe should be added, judges should have the ability to consider a person's history of mental health issues. Senate President Harman and House Speaker Weld said the act is working, but they want to hear suggestions, as you indicated, for what kind of improvements might be needed, because the act has already been in effect for, what, 2+ years. And the chief judge of the Circuit Court of Cook County, Judge Charles Beach, has set up a committee to review the county's electronic monitoring system, because in a lot of these instances, people aren't detained in jail, but they're put on electronic monitoring. And Welch says that he wants to see what may come out of this committee in terms of improvements. And then the House, as Mike indicated, the House is also going to hold committee hearings to hear from all the different stakeholders. One of the things that they also say is that, and I think this was the Sangamon County Sheriff pointed this, that there has to be some provision to address repeat offenders. And one of the quotes, Mike, that was in your story, the Sangamon County Sheriff, Paula Crouch, said, and this is her quote, "There's no accountability for the crimes that they're committing because they can commit a crime and they're either detained or in some cases they don't even have to make it to the jail. They're issued a citation with a court notice to come in." And so that's something that maybe would be addressed. If you're a repeat offender, you're not going to be allowed to go free. And part of it is there was a case up in Chicago, a horrible case, where a woman on a Blue Line train was soaked with gasoline and set afire by a man who was free on electronic monitoring following a separate assault case. So he was a repeat offender, obviously with mental issues. And so there's a question about why was he not detained? Why was he let go? And I don't know the background, obviously, but whoever the judge was initially who let him go free, not entirely free, he was on electronic monitoring, but he had the ability to go out and commit another crime. Obviously, he had mental issues. So I think those would be a couple of things that are going to be looked at. If I'm a repeat offender and I'm back for the fourth time for doing whatever, the judge may say, okay, you're habitual, we're going to keep you locked up. Or if I come in and I've got some mental health issues, if I come in and say, well, you can't lock me up because I'm Superman, they may say, well, we're going to try and get you some mental health care.
So, Mike, from what you've talked with the Republicans, they would support something that doesn't go as far as repealing the entire act, which is what many of them want. They would be okay with some improvements. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes. I would say one of the most noteworthy portions of my discussion with the Republicans, as well as our local law enforcement, was the fact that there is no need for a full repeal. In fact, our local state's attorney, John Millhiser, said that we don't need to repeal the whole thing. The state just needs to make sure and ensure that these individuals in the communities causing crime and making it more dangerous are detained. Now, he is respected by people on both sides of the aisle, and I'm curious to see what some of the Central Illinois Democrats say if they have, you know, private one-on-one meetings with some of these local law enforcement, specifically state's attorneys who are seeing these cases come through. I think that their messaging could help move the needle just a little bit. But I did want to note, too, that the Illinois Network for Pretrial Justice, the group that fought for the Safety Act reforms, says that bill that would have any felony be detainable is an opportunistic attempt by Republicans to undermine criminal justice reforms and make communities less safe. So it seems like a non-starter for that.
Interesting. While we're on the subject of criminal justice, a new law just took effect. It would automatically seal records of nonviolent offenders 3 years after they complete their sentence. That's called the Clean Slate Act. Mike, what's the impetus behind this?
Well, this has been many years in the making. Leader Jahan Gordon Booth, that's from Peoria, has actually fought for this since she started to have smaller expungement summits in her district, she saw the amount of people that would come in and say that they really just wanted the ability to get that second chance at life that they haven't been able to get. And this bill was, a strong bipartisan effort when it came to business working alongside law enforcement and Democrats, grassroots, all coming together. To say that felony convictions currently eligible for expungement could be automatically sealed by a circuit court judge or the Illinois State Police in 2029. Now, I know some people are saying, why is it so far away? This type of major change needs to have some time built in so that the state can ensure it's done properly. And, lawmakers passed legislation in 2017 to allow certain offenders with nonviolent felony convictions to apply for expungement, but every county had its own process to deal with the record sealing. And this was truly a way to address those issues. There were several Republicans who opposed the idea because they believe records should be unsealed for the entire public to know someone's criminal history. And it should be noted that serious crimes like murder, sex offenses, human trafficking, DUI, and domestic violence will be excluded from the automatic sealing. Nobody in that category would be able to just walk in and have the opportunity to get a job. That would be on their record, and people would be able to see that. Law enforcement, prosecutors, and courts will retain complete access to the records, and employers that are regulated by the state and federal law, with many people that work in Springfield and Central Illinois and Chicago, can access sealed records through the state police background checks. So it is going to be a major change, but there is time here that in between the implementation, there could be some tweaks made, but this has been years in the making.
Yeah, Charlie, you think this is a good move?
I think what Representative Gordon Booth said, and this is a quote, many of the individuals were getting in trouble between the ages of 18 and 24, oftentimes decades prior, and were still walking around with this black cloud, unable to now provide for their families, and they were stuck, calcified, oftentimes in poverty. Because if I have one of these convictions on my background, even if it's for a relatively minor offense, I could wind up not being able to get a loan, maybe not being able to be hired, all kinds of difficulties that make it extremely hard for someone who's got one of these relatively minor convictions to actually get their name cleared or be able to move forward with their life without having this hanging over their head. And I think it's something like close to a million people might be eligible for this, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, let's move on because that's not the only thing that lawmakers will be addressing this spring and talking about. One of those, apparently, one of those issues is affordability. And this has come up. Both parties now seem to be talking about this. But have we got any idea, Mike, on exactly what they want to do?
This has been the big word that everybody's hearing on both sides of the aisle. And I got to talk one-on-one with Speaker Welch this week. He said one of the biggest things we have to address is insurance rates. There was a homeowner insurance reform plan that passed out of the Senate in late October that didn't pass out of the House. It didn't have enough support. And really, that would address some of the unexpected rate hikes that have happened for State Farm previously and Allstate just recently. And what Democrats want to do is address the escrow payments that continue to rise, as well as some of the transparency there. They also hope to address auto insurance rates. I know that's something that Secretary of State Alexis Junulis is trying to fight for this year to ensure that people are only receiving a rate that's based on their driving and not based on their zip code, their race, or anything else that would be about them as a person. One of the other areas that they could potentially address, Democrats hope to see a millionaire's tax go through. And that has been mentioned in the past. We've seen it with former Governor Pat Quinn at the Capitol. He's fought for it several different times. And Illinois voters have agreed with the idea for property tax reform, saying that if we had this type of reform done for millionaires paying more, it could lower taxes for everybody. But it's hard to say if they could get this as a binding referendum, for the Constitution and if Illinois voters would support at that time. In the meantime, House GOP leader said this week that the best way to have affordability is to allow Illinoisans to benefit from President Donald Trump's major economic policies. Leader Tony McCombie says Illinois should pass bills banning taxes on tips and overtime. She'd also like to see the state lower the corporate income tax and create a more competitive business climate, also addressing the property taxes in the state and lowering the spending is one of the biggest things Republicans like to see when it comes to budget time.
Charlie, that millionaire's tax, as it's being called, that surcharge on people who make over $1 million a year, that necessarily not necessarily, is that a non-starter, do you believe, here in this this legislative session?
I would say, yeah, it's probably something that'll be talked about. And as Mike indicated, there was this advisory referendum where the voters approved it. But to get an amendment on the a constitutional amendment on the ballot for November would require a three-fifths vote in each chamber. And I'm thinking to myself, there won't be a single Republican who will vote for it. And I doubt that there are three-fifths of the Democrats who are in such non-contested races that they're going to be on the line for, in essence, increasing taxes on anybody. And when the Governor Pritzker, several years ago proposed an amendment for a graduated income tax in which higher income levels would be taxed at a higher rate, that was rejected. And the, in my judgment, the opposition to it was not very honest about criticizing it. They were saying, in essence, that everybody will have to pay more when that wasn't true. People on the lower end could wind up paying less. People of lower income would have a lower rate than what they currently have. So I would be surprised if it gets through and is before the voters. If it does get before the voters, and if it's an honest debate about it, which in these days is probably, being wishful thinking, it probably would stand a good chance of passing. I don't see the votes to get it on the ballot in the legislature.
What Mike mentioned, insurance, though, and that is something that seems like, and maybe utility costs as well, those are two big whacks that the consumer took last year. People saw their utility bills spike over the summer, and of course, insurance rates really jumped as well here in the state of Illinois. That's been a big deal. So, do you think something like that's going to get addressed?
I would say yes, it will. And partly because there was legislation in the fall session that actually was up and it failed by, a handful of votes. And part of the opposition was it only applied to homeowners insurance. And as I think Mike indicated, there's a desire to also make it apply to automobile owners insurance or vehicle owner insurance, and Secretary of State Alexis Janoulias is pushing for that. Basically, what the state is asking for is a little more transparency, explaining why the insurance rates are so high. And the suspicion was, particularly in the case of State Farm, that State Farm was kind of putting on their Illinois policyholders some of the costs that they had in dealing with disasters outside of the state of Illinois. And the State Farm said, no, this is all due to Illinois. But they have not yet come up with the data to show that. And that's what the legislature and the governor are looking for. They want the power to regulate rates. So if the rates go beyond what, in the judgment of the state regulators, is reasonable and appropriate, then those rates would be rolled back.
Affordability sounds like a good thing, but Illinois is in a fiscal crunch. A lot of this due to end of pandemic aid and now uncertainty at the federal level with what's going on. The Trump administration changes its mind a lot on what funding will get passed through to states. So this week, Charlie, the governor's office said $500 million being withheld from this year's budget. This comes as we inch closer to the budget address that will outline next year's spending plan for the state. This seems like an ominous sign.
Yeah, and it is, but it's not totally unexpected because you remember that last fall, the governor directed agencies, to identify 4% of allocated spending that they could do without. And this was in response to the federal legislation that President Donald Trump signed last summer that provided tax cuts and also additional changes in the tax laws, these dubbed the so-called the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which President Trump called it. But in any event, looking at what kind of problems the state might face as this federal law got enacted, the governor's office told the state agencies to identify money that they could do without. Now the governor's budget director, Alexis Sturm, sent a memo to state agency directors this week that the reserves are to provide a cushion for challenging budget years ahead. The reserves basically will total something like $482 million in FY26, which is a relatively small portion, only 1% of the state's overall budget. And in some instances, well, the largest amount would be in funding that would go for healthcare and human services. And part of it is that the state is going to be spending less in these areas because the costs are down or the demand is down. And part of it is that the state is doing better than was anticipated. But the administration is cautioning people that the budget presentation that the governor is going to make in a little less, what it would be about 3 weeks, is going to be very conservative in budgeting, and there's not going to be room for many increases. Interestingly enough, neither the pensions, the state's payment to the five pension systems, nor the budget for elementary and secondary education is affected by these reserves. And in another, I guess, kind of ominous sign, there was word that came out earlier this week that the Trump administration has ordered a review of federal funding sent to 14 states and the District of Columbia, 13 of which have Democratic governors. And of course, Illinois is involved. And it's basically saying that the agencies have to review whatever their funding, grants, loans, cooperative agreements, contracts, other financial awards, including those made to colleges and universities over the last couple of fiscal years, and what will be projected for the coming fiscal year. And they say, well, we're out to stamp out waste and fraud and blah, blah, blah. But basically, the impetus behind it appears to be that President Trump wants to cut off funding to sanctuary cities. And here's a quote from the president. Starting February 1, we're not making any payments to sanctuary cities or states having sanctuary cities because they do everything possible to protect criminals at the expense of American citizens. Now, this is something to be worried about, obviously, but it should be noted that the previous attempts by the president and his administration to stop funding in most instances have been repeatedly halted by courts, at least at the circuit and appellate level. And we'll have to wait and see when those cases reach the Supreme Court level, whether or not the president will be able to unilaterally hold back a lot of this funding that has already been approved by Congress.
Yeah. And Mike, what are you hearing from people regarding the governor's announcement that they're holding back some of this money, prepare for an austere budget? What are you hearing from the people you've talked with?
I will say that people were happy to finally get some of the answers from that executive order back in September. Many reporters, as well as lawmakers, were kind of sitting there thinking, will we see where those cuts are being made? And you know, we were able to see those numbers finally come forward. And some Republicans I talked to said, you know, it's good to see cuts, but it took 5 months to finally get answers when it was supposed to be only a month after the executive order. I think there's also some concern from the minority party that there's cuts to public safety agencies, but there weren't cuts made to Democrat projects for their district. And some say, we should stop spending money for immigrants that are in the community that may or may not be illegal immigrants. Some of that funding has been cut down in the last budget, but there still is funding for healthcare services for undocumented immigrants in the state that are under a certain age bracket. I think that there's going to be more cutting and slicing as we talk about the upcoming budget for fiscal year 2027. And it's going to be, I think, a cautious year for people going into these hearings that, state agencies are having to ask for less than anticipated, but they already know coming in that prioritizing and limiting hiring or other expenditures will be key for them. The governor is going to try and remain fiscally responsible, but it's the unpredictability from Washington that will be the major change for this budget year.
Should be an interesting legislative session for sure. It's time now for our notes from the field, and Mike will stay with you.
Absolutely. One of the things we heard about this week, small business leaders are calling for a major change when it comes to the loans that they're able to get. This APR for all bill would require non-bank lenders to disclose the annual percentage rate for loans offered to small businesses. Basically, if you think that you're someone who's a individual person that's trying to get a loan, we're able to see how much you're going to be paying on that loan, whether it's for your mortgage or your car. And it's very transparent when you go through that process. But some of these small businesses that are joining banks to try and get that loan, it may say it's going to be 10%. But later on, they look and it jumps up to 40%, even 100% rates sometimes. And many of these small business owners are in black and brown communities struggling to get by, and they end up falling under because they can't pay those bills.
And Charlie.
Well, legislation that is being proposed would allow rideshare drivers to unionize, and it would give them the right to unionize and to collectively bargain with transportation network companies like Uber and Lyft, and they would be able to bargain on issues such as pay, benefits. There'd be an appeals process over deactivation, paid leave, and a driver's right to specific trip information. I think it's really significant in terms of changing the landscape for the rideshare drivers.
Also this week, Commonwealth Edison, the utility giant in Northern Illinois, filing a plan to help it meet growing energy demand and infrastructure needs. It would add about $3 on a monthly bill. The company says it's needed to account for increased energy demand from things like data centers. This still needs approval of state regulators, and it could take several months for them to consider that. That's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and WAND-TV's Mike Miletich. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. And join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.